Lovely. So welcome to this first ever graduate program for basically people that want to go all the way, that really want the deeper implications of each lesson in a dissolving ego course, because I could spend probably about 100 hours talking about each lesson and really the deepest application of each one. And that's what this program is for those that are really curious about how far each lesson can take you. And what I want to do each month is one live session like this. And I'll go through, in the live session, I will go through some deeper aspect of each, of one lesson in particular. Today we're going to look at lesson two, the one that everyone loves. Yay, causality. The one that everyone understands. And each, I'm going to give you some homework to do for each live session, and you can feed that back to me. So there'll be three aspects of the homework, and the first bit is to look at a deeper aspect of each lesson, and then I'm going to give you a question or a point to contemplate later in this lesson. So something to investigate deeply, so where your self-inquiry can go, because there's some ways to direct self-inquiry, looking at reality, so that it becomes very, very simple, very, very quickly, and extraordinarily powerful once we get above the minutiae of the mind. For the most part, it gets quicker and a lot easier and faster. And there's some questions, some ways of looking at yourself that take you out of that. So there'll be some homework around that. And then we're going to read a passage from today from the Hamilton Gita, and I'll give you some homework to do with that. Homework is not compulsory. I should imagine there are people that just love listening to the sessions, and that's enough. And then there'll be some of you that really, really, really want to take these investigations as far as they go, and they'll become beautifully joyful. And each one of these lessons, once per month, is going to be enough to get you all the way, but to study them month by month. So the idea is we do this live session and you study what comes in this live session for the month. Each week, if you want to, you can feed back to me through the contact form on the graduate program page. So there's a space where you can put in your message, your email address, and your name. And I won't be able to answer them personally, but what I will do is once a week, I will take them all and read them anonymously and expand upon what you've said, what challenges you're having, what revelations you're seeing, where your investigation is going, so that we get this once a week upload to the members page as well with all this feedback. And then you can watch that as well as it goes and guide your own inquiry deeper based on what everyone else is seeing. So you're like the one self, but you're going to be able to learn much faster through all of these bodies that are in the graduate program and are in the have taken the course as well. So this is not a replacement for the course, but it's a kind of faster track. And it's really for those that are, they want to live like I do, you know, so that total freedom or bust, you know. So it's not hard to do. It just needs some consistent looking at some really important areas. There is also, you may have seen, a Facebook group just for the graduate program members. And I won't be able to comment and post in there, but I would highly encourage you join that if you're on Facebook and interact with the other graduate program members on there on what you're seeing, what you're recognizing from the inquiry. Help each other. I really, really, really would like to suggest that you get together in groups or all together if you can organize it somehow in between these sessions and go through what you're learning as well. It will make your learning faster because you're not just the person waking up to the self, you are the self, and you can learn from each other's insights, as you've probably seen in satsang. So it's easiest to do that if you're all wanting the same thing, and it's a small group right now. There probably aren't going to be anybody else joining until the November Dissolve an Ego course finishes. So get to know each other, make friends with each other in this group in particular, and work with each other, help each other, and you'll get there a lot faster. And it's not complete awakening or bust, really. It's every time you investigate something, you're going to get more clear of the mind, more peace, more joy, more love. You can never get to the end of understanding the lessons. They can always deepen, even for me, every time I teach it still. And this is not a replacement for the course. I might have already said it's to add to the course. So if you've only taken it once or twice, take it at least two more times. You can take it as many times as you like. I don't care. I love teaching it. Every time I teach it, I learn it deeper. I see it deeper. So that can be an endless thing. And each time you learn, there'll be more and more joy, more happiness and peace. So let's get started on today. Just let me double check. Yep. Okay. So causality then is lesson two, that causality is not true, that there isn't a cause or an effect. And in my own, or to say that cause and effect are the same thing, the same one being, either of those ways are going to help you. In my own pathway, I came to see fairly early on that there wasn't a cause, meaning there wasn't a separate being that I thought was there. Every time I looked in my, as we see in lesson three, when I look for a separate being in the noumenon, when I look for someone tuning in, it's just not there. There's just the noumenon and there's the body. And I saw that fairly quickly. But one thing that took me a long time to understand is that I was still believing in the effects of this separate being. So it's one thing to see there is no separate being, but I may still be believing in the karmic patterns that are present because of this separate being. You know, my karma, my tendencies. And when we're very acutely living those karmic patterns, either in our body, in our finances, in our relationships, in our world, in our work, it takes a little bit to see that we're imagining effects of a non-existent cause. If the separate being is not there, then any effects that we seem to be living with of that separate being. So I need to be more compassionate. I need to let go of anger. I need to, all of that. I want more respect. I need more money. All of that is based on this idea that there is a separate being. We might have seen that the cause, we might have seen through the cause. Remember in lesson two, we said the cause and effect are the same thing. The in here, inside the glass in the bowl, and the out there. And out there can be the body. It doesn't have to be out there in my world. Out there is my relationships, my finances, my body, my career. Even my awakening is out there to the self. So it's a reflection. So anything happening in the body, in the finances, in any aspect of your life where you've got repetitive issues going on over and over again, it needs to be seen that the effect is also unreal. The cause and the effect are the same one, meaning if there isn't a causal factor like a separate being, then there also isn't the effect. So why are we all living the effects then? Why is there pain in the body? Why is this condition in the body? Where were my finances so screwed up? Why were my relationships so screwed up for quite some time? How can we look at that and say it doesn't exist? So this is where lesson two and lesson four really come into a beautiful kind of joining. In the natural state, in the awakened state, when it manifests effortlessly in your life, there is only abundance. There is no lack. There's no lack possible at all in reality. There is no way for the self to be absent from some place, to show up as a void or a nothingness. Something has to manifest, and only abundance ever manifests. But if I believe in the effect of this pattern, then I'm going to experience lack as if it was real. So abundance is going to be the natural state in all ways. So abundance of peace, love, joy, abundance of harmony, abundance of life force, abundance of energy, abundance of money, abundance of time, more than enough of all of these things. Not necessarily, an excess, but always more than you need, never being able to run out or have not enough. So more than enough respect in relationships, more than enough time to do everything you want to do, more than enough resources, inner and outer. If your life isn't looking like that in some area, it's because you've turned down the dimmer switch on this abundance. So if I'm still believing in the effect of this karmic pattern, I'm going to experience, I have a, in my room here, I have a light and I have a dimmer switch on it. And when I turn it on full, it's really, really bright. And then if I turn that dimmer switch down, it gets progressively dimmer until it would be, off completely. There isn't really any off in reality. So if you disallow love, it looks like fear and hate. If you disallow peace, it looks like suffering. If you disallow joy, it looks like excessive fear. So if we're experiencing lack anywhere in our life, it's because we're disallowing some part of the abundance because we're believing still in an effect. So let's take a concrete example. I'd come to see for myself that there wasn't a separate being many, many times, and yet I was still believing in someone that needed to learn to allow money to come into my life, or that there was something I needed to do in order for the abundance that I knew was possible to manifest. Now, abundance can be financial, as it was for me, relationships too, or it can be in terms of health, it can be in terms of energy, it can be in terms of anything at all. Anything that you want, there is an abundance of it. There cannot be any lack. So it took me a while to realize I'm seeing here there isn't a separate being, but then I'm totally believing in one that's got to do something here to change this situation. The situation in the body or your world or whatever it is, and the belief that you can do something about it are the same thing. You can't believe in being able to do something and have the effect disappear. It's actually the idea that I can do something spiritually about this problem is the problem as well. Two sides of one coin. So the homework for this particular section is to, you have to listen to this a couple of times. And I'm going to go through these sections quickly, all three parts of this in this live class. But it'll be up to you then to go back and really listen and absorb it. And there'll be some time afterwards for questions in this session, but for now we'll move fairly quickly. So the homework is to look at in your life where you're still believing in the effect. So if there is something wrong with your body, then there is no such thing as illness and disease. I'm going to say it really direct. I'm going to give you it straight up in this class. So hopefully you really want that. Otherwise, you're in the wrong place. There is only the disallowing of the abundance of well-being that is the natural state. And of course, none of us are doing that consciously. There is only the disallowing of the abundance financially that we want, which appears as not enoughness. There is only the disallowing of the mutual love and respect that can appear in a relationship as the self unfolds as a relationship. And when that is disallowed, it looks like an argument, it looks like conflict, it looks like difference of opinion, lack of respect, lack of this, that, and the other. And of course, all of these come with a lack of peace as well, as I feel divided and in conflict. So you kind of have to look at what's going on in your life with different eyes. You have to look at the experience you're having right in that moment and say, this isn't ultimately real. This is, I'm creating a mirage. A mirage looks very, very real when you get up, when you see it in the road on a hot day. It looks like there's water there. And when you get up close to it, it disappears. When you really look at what this experience is that you're having, you'll see it's not real. Only possible thing there is that can shape how manifestation appears is you. And if you are believing that there is something you can do, and of course, all the things that you're trying to do right now will be spiritual doings, And I had to really get this. If I do anything about this supposed financial problem at all, it gets worse because they're the same thing. Now, I'm not for a second saying, if there's something wrong with the body, don't treat the body, don't look after the body. If there was a money due to go out and then I didn't have enough, of course, I would try to fix that immediate problem somehow. I'm not saying don't take physical action in the world. Do what you need to do with the body and with the finances and the relationships. If someone's disrespecting you, I'm not advising you just sit there and go, this isn't real, you're an illusion. You will still say to them, look, please treat me better. But inside, when the situation arises, you refuse to agree that there's anything you can do about it or need to because it's not there in actuality. Just because we've been living these effects of this imaginary being all of our life doesn't mean it's ever actually been real. We came into this lifetime where we left off last time with these karmic patterns that we were trying to get to the end of because we really believed in a separate being that they belonged to. But if the separate being isn't there, the cause, how real are the effects? How real is the actual thing going on in your life? Don't get me wrong, it will feel extraordinarily real when the body's in pain, when the body's hurting. And I'm not for a second saying to disregard that. Do what you need to do to look after the body, to look after your bank account, to look after your children, all of that. But inside, you must become resolute that there is nothing I need to do about this. And we kind of jokingly call this the ostrich approach. I'm going to put my head in the sand when it comes to trying to fix these karmic patterns. If I don't see my world, then that will reflect as perfection. My world is a personal thing. So everybody comes to self-inquiry, goes, yeah, I get it. There's no separate being. And lesson three, we'll see that as well. And everyone comes to lesson two and gets some basic understanding that cause and effect are the same in here and out there are the same. But everywhere I see people running around trying to fix patterns that don't exist. And it's that very insistence that we can do something to fix it that is reflecting as the disturbance. Or as we said before, we're standing in this still lake and we're flapping our arms around violently saying, why isn't this water still? I said, just stop trying to do anything about this problem spiritually. I'm saying spiritually, not, if something is going wrong in your life, I'm not saying to ignore it. Hopefully, you get the message of what I'm saying here. So, the deepest aspect of lesson two is that all of your karmic patterns are completely and utterly untrue. It means there is only perfection, there is only abundance, there is only the self. There never was such a thing as absence or lack or not enoughness. Although we can do a really convincing job of creating that experience. Why? Because we are infinitely powerful as the self. And just because we've been doing that our entire life, my very first memory was of not enough money, and parents arguing over not enough money. And I just never once questioned that all the way through. Just because I've been experiencing that my entire existence, I had to come to admit there was only abundance. And when a lack of abundance seemed to appear, I had to begin to disregard it. For normal people in the world, they can do things to sort stuff out because they're a separate being that's doing. But as you see more clearly that you are the self, then the effortless one, then you're going to come to start to struggle more and more if you agree. We'll have some time for specific questions on these, as I said afterwards, but I just want to get through what we need to go through in this lesson. Just to want to understand what I'm saying is enough. You don't have to struggle hard. You just listen, discuss it with each other, and it'll begin to unfold. The moment I try to do something about this imaginary problem, it gets worse. And even the fact that I think I can do, it gets worse. It is that disturbance, that disturbance that I can do something. Only the body's doing, only the mind is doing. You're not doing, you never have, ever. And that reflects this disturbance in our body, in our world. And I don't care what we're trying to do at this stage, whether we're trying to forgive, we're trying to let go, we're trying to transcend, we're trying to deepen in our seeing, even that most noble of intentions, we're going to have to let go of now because it's going to start to disturb us. Is that silence trying to deepen or let go or forgive or transcend or allow more abundance or get more respect or whatever we're doing as human beings in our karmic patterns? Can it be ill? Can it be tired? Can it age? Can it all of those things? If it's not true for the silence now, it's not true for you. If it's not true for the noumenon, it's not true for you. And you will lift yourself out of karma and time and progress and becoming in this seeing completely. You'll be immune to the effects of anything, and then the outer world or your body will begin to reflect more and more the abundance that is the natural state. If you're not experiencing abundance, then you're still trying to do something. And the doing may be extraordinarily subtle now. I might be coming to satsang with the intention of seeing deeper, and that's enough to disturb you at this level. Absolutely. If you touch even the slightest idea there's more for you to see, guess what? There'll be more for you to see and problems to clear up. Such is your infinite power as the self. And it took me a long time to figure this out. But when I stopped, I still took action that I needed to do, but inside I didn't agree that there was anything wrong at all. And hopefully you're seeing this. If there's nothing wrong in here, nothing for you to fix, no more work to do on yourself, your own inner perfection is going to reflect out there because cause and effect are one, inner and outer are one. Okay. So obviously that's going to give you some homework to do, to look for the effects that you're still believing in. What's going wrong in your life and what are you trying to fix? And probably you'll be trying to fix it in here. Not necessarily even going wrong, but where is there a little bit of friction? Where is there a lack of abundance? And you'll find that you're trying to do something about it. You cannot get rid of or change a mirage or a reflection. It's not possible. You can only see this thing that seems to keep happening to me feels extraordinarily real because I'm creating it as real. You are literally the creator, Brahma. You are the sustainer and the destroyer, meaning you're creating this illusionary world, virtual world, as I did, and sustaining it through trying to get rid of it, ironically, in the end. So homework for that is to go through your life and see where you're looking at the effects and trying to get rid of the effects of a non-existent cause. And it's just wanting to see that is going to begin to clear some things up. Also, the investigation for this month, this September, is to look at the question, where am I? For me, this was extraordinarily powerful at lifting me out of suffering. And I've been working with this question with a few people over the last couple of weeks, and it's been a lot of fun. This question, where am I, is going to begin to, again, to help you lift out of karma, out of time. And your body and mind will always be in time, and that's fine, but they needn't be suffering at the same time. So to even ask the question, where am I, is going to bring up the assumption that I'm here. I have a location. And as we see when we look in lesson three, there isn't a separate being. There is only the noumenon when we look. So first thing to do is brush upon that lesson three exercises. If you're not 100% clear that there isn't a separate being, start from that. All you find is the noumenon when you look. When you look for yourself, you find the noumenon. Where are you then? Can you say, as the noumenon, as that formless presence, that consciousness, the awareness, can you say where you are now? Where is the silence? And where isn't it? Do you actually have a location? Your body has a location. Your thoughts have a location going on in the head. Your emotions have a location happening in the body. Even your sense of experiencing from one particular location is happening through the body. But if you don't have a location, and we can do this right now, if you tune into the noumenon, whichever way you do, I'm going to go with the silence because that's always my favorite. If I ask where that silence is that is me, I don't really know in honesty. And I'm giving you, because of the trying to keep it brief, I'm giving you the process of where you're going to come to in your realization with this. I don't know where the awareness is. I know it's here, but I can't say it's over only here. I can't say that I, as the awareness, as the noumenon, have a location. If I took a map of the universe and gave it to you and said, where are you on this map? You wouldn't be able to tell me in all truth. You can only tell me where your body is. The noumenon doesn't have a location. The implications of that are massive, meaning if you don't have a location as the formlessness, then you cannot be only present in one place and absent from somewhere else. To not have a location means you must be everywhere all the time. And to begin to really see this is going to lift you out of identification with the body. I ask you where you are right now, if you really look, you won't be able to say. You'll be able to tell me that you're here. You're very definitely here. You're present. But where are you precisely? And where are you not? And do you have any edges as the self, any boundaries? And then if you don't know where you are, how do you know which one is your body? How do you know that you're the one listening to this and not the one talking right now? Can you still say with the same certainty that this is my body, this one here, and that all the rest are not? If you don't know where you are in truth, how can you say what karmic patterns you have? Do you even have any then? If you are more like a formless, homogeneous unit, the one unit that cannot be divided, is present everywhere all the time, which body's particular karmic patterns are you going to identify with now? And you either have to kind of stop identifying with any of them or begin to identify with all of them, but not in a personal way. That karma and suffering and vasanas, samskaras, whatever you want to call them, impressions that we need to remove, everything we were just talking about from lesson two, all that is encompassed in the body and mind. Thoughts and emotions and experiences equal karmic patterns. They're all happening in the body. What remains for you to solve then if you don't know where you are? Do you know what problems you have then if you don't know where you are in truth? And there's literally no ground to stand on here, where the Son of Man has nowhere to rest his head. And it'll feel a little bit strange, as Christ said at first, but it's only being honest. You don't know where you are. You can't say, I'm over here, or I'm not, or I'm over there, or you can't say, I'm not here, I'm over there. You can't be divided in that way as a silence. You cannot be separated from anything. And that has to begin to cause you to identify with all of creation, the whole universe, when you really get this. What that means is, you know, if I'm having an argument with this being and they won't give me respect, and I really feel I need respect, suddenly I'm not so sure which one of these two beings I am, or these two bodies I am, even. I can't really say, in all honesty. You can't tell me with any honesty whether you're the student or the teacher now. And it really doesn't matter from that place. And you will have all your worldly knowledge still. You'll still, you know, be able to remember that your children are your children and that your boss is your boss and not to tell them that they don't exist because that's not a good idea. But, and definitely don't tell them that you're everywhere and omnipresent because that's, you know, probably best said in satsang. But inside, you won't be able to identify with any particular body when you really grasp this. Let's just check again. Where are you? Where is your presence? Where is the presence? Where is the consciousness? It's here. But that's the only thing you can say about it. You can say what it isn't. It isn't only in one place. Where does something stop that has no edges? It's formless, it's utterly unmanifest what you really are, so it doesn't have any ability to bump up against anything. And can you even tell me now that there's further for you to go on your awakening if you don't know where you are? It's really only based on which body you've been identifying with and as. You've been identifying with a body that's called the student, and you've not been identifying with this body that's called the teacher. But that difference has to begin to disappear in this seeing. There is no difference between us. There's certain bodies where it's reflecting that clarity and that peace clearer. And there's other bodies where it's only just coming to start to reflect that. And then there's other bodies where it's totally not reflecting that at all. The dimmer switch is right down. And that's absolutely fine. But can you say which is your body if you don't even know where you are? If I show you a map of the universe and you say, well, I am here, instead of I am here, which one of these 7 billion bodies is yours? And what about all the other forms? Can you say, it just all begins to melt away in this question, where are you actually? All of your problems, every single one, everything you could ever ask me or cook up another problem is going to come from this idea that I have a location. I know where I am. I know where I'm looking from in time and space. But it's not true. It's only where the body is. And in every body, you're looking through the senses in every body and thinking through the brain in every human body and having the same sense. I am only here. And as I said before, that sense, that recognition that I'm everywhere, or even everywhere, eventually will have to be discarded as a location. It's a better feeling location than somewhere. But even that is not true ultimately. As we've seen in lesson 4, there really isn't any forms actually. No objects, no phenomena. So without any phenomena to reference where you are, this is where lesson 3 and lesson 4 come together very well. How are you going to tell me where you are then and what progress you need to make now? And that you're not already completely and utterly the Buddha nature. Only if you believe you have a location do you begin to, I can say where I am. I'm here only. Do you have any further to go? So, for me right now, there's a recognition and total knowingness that I don't have any location. And there's total embracing of the sense of being someone somewhere also. That doesn't have to disappear. It just has to be seen. It's not really true. While there's a body, there's a sense of being someone and a sense of being somewhere in time and space. It looks like I'm looking from this corner here. But I've seen that that's not really true. It gets more and more real, that sense that I'm someone somewhere, as I believe I have a location. My location is this body only. And it all gets a bit funky from there. All the karma comes into birth then. Time and space and process and even the whole awakening itself. How much further do you have to go then if you don't know where you are? Are you going to identify as this sofa or as this body, as the body that's listening? Or a rock, or a cloud, or some distant galaxy, or all of it, or none of it. And hopefully you can see the immense power of this question to kind of really lift you out of suffering immediately. Any problem you ever have is with this idea that you have a location. Okay, so we'll go on to the third and final thing for today, and then I'll open it up for questions. And as I said before, if If you fall in love with one of these things I'm talking about, you really want to investigate, or you really want to investigate all three things all month. And we're going to hold these sessions hopefully the same time each month, same day. So we have pretty much a whole month to investigate these that I've been talking about and get together with each other. But if one of them's really grabbed you, then go for it. If one of them really feels, I don't want to look at that, then I'd suggest going for it also, because there's something protecting ego inside. And there's nothing wrong with ego. We just want to move beyond it, to see we're already beyond it. And to do that, we're going to put this third thing into practice. I'm going to read a section from the Gita. And what we all do as students is to read or listen to something like this as a student. So what I would like you to do, and you might not be able to do it right today as I'm reading, but the goal of this is to listen as if you are the teacher, the one who wrote the words. Don't identify as the one reading the book and learning from it. Identify for the time being as the one who wrote the words. And before I do that, I'm going to read a very short section from the Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna is talking. And Krishna has this wonderful way of showing you where your identity is. So as I'm reading this section too, and I'll read some from my own in a little moment, I want you to identify with Krishna. You are Krishna, and he is speaking through, he's speaking, or you are him speaking. You are not Arjuna that he's talking to here, even not even the student along pathway. Listen as if you are Krishna, and what he's saying, and what this is going to do is it's going to bring up all the places where your ego is hiding. So if you were to speak as Krishna speaks, you're going to feel uncomfortable inside. Well, I don't feel infinite, or I don't feel, you know, something like that. And then it's going to, as you listen to this as Krishna, then, because you are already, by the way, then it's going to show you what areas of your ego are still kind of hiding. So Krishna says, you say, I am easily attained by the person who always remembers me and is attached to nothing else. Such a person is a true yogi, Arjuna. Great souls make their lives perfect and discover me. They are freed from mortality and the suffering of this separate existence. Every creature in the universe is subject to rebirth, Arjuna, except the one who is united with me. Those who realize life's supreme goal know that I am unmanifested and unchanging. Having come home to me, they never return to separate existence. So it's easy to read that as identifying with Arjuna, isn't it? That he's a student. But how does it feel when I tell you those are your words? Does it bring up, is there a sense of a gap between them? And it's enough to notice that gap, that eventually you're going to have to admit that you are Krishna already, or Christ, or Buddha, or whatever particular sage that you feel a resonance with. And last but not least, I'm going to read Reverence to the One, which is from this one. And again, listen as if you wrote this. Don't listen as if you're hoping to get to that place one day. And just let it stretch you, let it open you up. Reverence to the One. Whom shall I worship now? Where shall I place my devotion? I find nothing to rest my attention on. I cannot find anyone to help me. What do I give my reverence to now? What can I see that is unholy? There is nothing for me to release, remove, or reject. What should I practice now? Where do I need to go? There is nothing that I can become. What can I possibly do now? There is nothing to be done or undone. What is the use of surrender? There is nothing left for me to give. The contemplator has vanished without a trace, and there is nothing for me to see. I have no needs for goals, dreams, or a purpose. I have no need for more, less, or the same. This fire has burnt everything and left nothing untouched. What is the use in further imaginations? So I'm going to open it up for questions now about any of those three things, but I'll just ask that you keep the questions and discussions about what we've discussed today. And there we go. And there's plenty of other space to discuss what we do in open satsang. So I'd like to keep this time for questions about what I've been through today precisely. So the homework is to contemplate what I've said about lesson two today, cause and effect being the same, and to really go into this question, where am I? And if you have the Gita or whatever, or you can play the recording where I've read these two passages, read them, listen as the teacher, as the awakened self already, and see what that brings up inside and really look at that. Is that really true? You know, some sense, when I first read Krishna's words, I realized when he said, all those will come to me, he meant me, as in me already, as in that which is unmanifested and everywhere. So, okay, we'll start with Mike.
Hello, can you hear me?
Can you?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, all good.
Okay, good. Okay. I didn't think I was going to be first. I just sort of raised my hand. I thought there would be a bunch of people. So this is, I don't know if this is really a question or more of confirmation in some of the things that you had just said. So I had a money incident over the last couple of days in which, you know, there was worry and strong doing around money and trying to resolve things around money. Even talked to my therapist about it and stuff right afterwards. But then when I meditated right after that, there was the realization that there was nothing imperfect about what had happened. There was nothing imperfect about that. It was just, I wouldn't even say it was the self appearing as that. It was just me, the self. It was just self-selfing. It wasn't really anything that the self, I was like, honestly, in total bliss about it, realizing this, there was nothing imperfect about that. What happened there? And so when you said something like earlier right now, you know, that you said, where is it? The body acts as though there's a lack or a problem to fix and goes about resolving it. But inside, there's nothing to fix. It's already perfect. So you are that which observes the body doing its thing. But as the awareness, you know that the moment is already perfect because it's all you. So it is, you know, like a play acted out in front of you, complete with seeming conflict, but you would never want to get rid of any aspect of it. Is this correct? Is that what I'm understanding?
It's a kind of intermediary. Eventually, you won't even watch the body act out that pattern. You want to see the body's actions are coming from what you believe to be true. So if the body is trying to do something, to fix something, if some action has been taken to try to resolve this problem, then there might be some belief in the effect there still. You might just want to check. The acid test is, am I emotionally disturbed? Or do I seem to lose my peace to any degree at all when this pattern runs? If I'm elated by me fixing the problem and then depressed by me experiencing this problem again, then I'm still trying to do something about it. I'm still seeing it as real as well, the effect. So that's a good way to look at it. Eventually, if the deeper seeing has happened with this, then the whole thing will go away completely, outer and inner. So if there's still some playing of the pattern going on, you're obviously coming out of it from what you're saying, but maybe just to look a little closer. Am I really still trying to do, am I even trying to see this a certain way or something like that, you know, making it into a doing? Very, very subtle.
mean, I could definitely say there was emotion at play there about, you know, going along with the lack, and there's anxiety and things like that. But I guess, as you say, some of this during this satsang, I'm confused a little. I mean, if there is an agreement with a belief in lack, and you are already the one that is perfect, is there anything even wrong with this belief in the lack? I mean, isn't it all me as the one that is perfect anyway, even with this drama of the lack?
It is, but do you want to keep playing out this pattern for the rest of the body's existence? It's already perfect, yes. Wouldn't you rather experience abundance of abundance rather than abundance of lack? You know, it's what's kindest for the mind and body, and what's going to be the best example for everyone around me. And you could kind of look at the pattern going, none of it's real anyway, there's nothing for me to fix. And that's true. But that can be, and that's, you know, the seeing is what I'm saying. But then, all right, well, I'd like to really, when this is really gone, this idea that I'm the doer, then the reflection should also show me that too, that there's absolutely nothing for me to do. That I should be seeing that perfection in an outer way as well as an inner way as well.
So I'm interpreting by that that the body will still do things seemingly to resolve things. Will still go about trying to, you know, take activity and stuff, but it will just, the body and the mind and the consciousness will reflect this total peace and fullness as it does it, rather than doing it from this area of panic and lack.
Yeah, there should be no disturbance at all in your state, no matter what goes on outside, whether it's like for me last Saturday doing that interview, I would have been absolutely throwing up with nerves, you know, really, really scared, completely disturbed, thinking I could mess it up or something like that. And there wasn't elation in the success, and there isn't depression in the failure or something, or a pattern showing up again. Not even a slight wobble anymore at all, and then the patterns disappear. Because the very fact you're seeing the pattern play, even if there's not so much disturbance, means it's still being believed there's something I can do. It's reflecting back to you. There's still a sense of a spiritual doing, something like that.
So how does, I don't even know if this is even necessary, how does one separate themselves from that, you know, the voice of the ego? I guess it's the whole, is that really your problem? Is this really you?
What do you seem to have to do when this problem arises, this pattern plays, what do you seem to have to do to fix it or to get rid of it? And then to realize what I'm doing to try to fix it or get rid of it is actually setting up the next round of it. And what I'm doing to fix it is only at best temporarily easing the symptoms of it, whichever way. You know, so for me, a lack of finances, there was some, okay, I need to see something. I need to, I'm not awake enough yet. There must be some other level I have to access before this stops happening. And it was that very idea that was showing up, a lack of authenticity here shows up as a lack of financial resources out there. And in the end, this is just not true. I'm not going to respond to it as if it's true. And even though I'm experiencing it right now, I know it's not real. It has to kind of be like that. And is why I'm saying it in the graduate program, because if I say an open satsang, you know, you can't fix your problems. There's no point trying, because the cause and the effect are one, and everyone's just going to go, well, there's no need for me to wake up then. But you can understand it at this level when we've been through the course and seen causality to some degree, at least all of us.
Yeah, I still feel to a certain degree that I'm in the lower level. But because the belief that the ego has is that if I don't come from this anxious place of trying to solve the problem, then it won't get solved. Like, you know, the ego is just sort of saying, what am I supposed to do? Sit there and meditate and try to be peaceful.
And has anything you've ever tried to do physically or spiritually solve the problem ever?
From a place of panic and needing to fix a problem? I mean, I can say that it has, but on the other hand, it's just...
it keeps going around again.
Space. Yeah, it just keeps bringing up more spaces, like energies like that.
So it never fixed it anyway. At best, it temporarily eased it. And it's setting up the next round of it. And even from a place of peace, the idea that I can do something to make my life better, if I touch the idea that, okay, you know, students are growing worldwide and it's all going great and it'd be great if we could get the message out there more, let's do this to make that happen, it's going to begin to, it's just not the natural state, is it? It's going to begin to hurt me inside, you know, so it's okay. It's this idea that ego has that my actions spiritually have actually fixed anything anyway. Really, you've just been watching the whole time.
Yeah, that's only realized after the whole episode is done, and then, you know, meditating is realizing, like, the self that I am is just watching that whole thing and is not having a problem with anything.
Yeah, and I'm not
quite blissful.
So in the end, you won't feel a need to try to do something to sort it out. You won't need to, you know, go into all the usual spiritual strategies and all of that to kind of resolve it. It'll just be, oh, there's an echo, and I'm not. If I respond to it, I'm going to make it all so much more real. Because we talk about illusion, you know, talk about Maya and illusion that we create, the sense of being a separate being. And this is very literally a three-dimensional, real-time, holographic illusion that we're experiencing with this body, isn't it? So it's going to feel very extraordinarily real when it's happening. But it's really just who we've got, you know, become in that moment, who we've assumed ourselves to be in that moment.
And this is when I've heard you say things like when you've encountered issues and problems, or at least, you know, those kinds of things, in this illusion, you've said, it'll work itself out. It's not that you are saying that, try to convince yourself. It's just this knowing that you have, you know, it'll just work itself out.
Yeah, and to see the effect must be as unreal as the cause. If the cause isn't there, the effect must be also not there, really. It seems to be there. Boy, does it seem to be there. But I can't agree inside anymore that it is there. I can create all kinds of shapes. I can create the universe. I can create an experience of lack that goes on and on and on and shows up again and again and again. Still not ultimately true. Feels true. And my effort to do something about it, it is going to, even my lack of peace, if I try to do something about my lack of peace, I'm going to feel less peaceful. There is no way to fix that problem.
Yeah. Right.
Good.
Basic causality.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Lovely. Good, good. Ian and Maggie? Did somebody else have their hand up? Sharon's got a hand up as well.
Marcy, I think.
Did you have your hand up, Marcy? Has it gone accidentally or? Anyway. Okay, no worries. Okay, Ian and Maggie?
I just wanted to ask, this has come up, this question has come up many times, and I've asked you it many times, but it kind of came up as you were talking again. You said that if you know that there isn't anything to do, there isn't anything to see, and you also said that if you know, be kind to the body and look after the body. And I had it was all over now and it was all clear, but I had quite a major health scare 2 weeks ago, and I was just like watching it and went along to the appointment they gave me. And from that appointment, they said, we need you to go to the hospital again this afternoon for a further one. And that was when there was a little bit of panic. My question is, how do you do something and look after the body without doing something, without making it a something and you're actually doing something?
Do it for no reason at all. You know, if you try to do something to make it better, to fix the problem, or to, you know, if you have pain in the body, you can take a painkiller because it's a nice thing to do for the body. Or you can do it to try to get rid of symptoms of a karmic pattern that aren't there. Can you see the difference? Or do you want me to?
I can. I can hear you, and I'll listen to it again. My feeling when you were describing it, and again then, is that to be doing something, to be having this investigation that went on, was because I kind of fell into the system of it, and you know, it's fine, but I was going along because there might be an issue. And that feels like, even though there wasn't much worry about it, it's still a doing. I'll listen to what you said again, what you've just said.
Something wrong with the body. The only cause of something being wrong with the body is the idea that there's something wrong with you.
Okay.
And then when that's fully seen through, that there's nothing I need to do to be myself, the self, Krishna, that's going to reflect in the body, you know, as an abundance of well-being, the more you see it. Of course, the body will have to come to an end through some reason eventually, but that doesn't mean we have to live the effects of this belief. You know, all of our karmic patterns, the effects that we were talking about, manifesting different places to different beings, those that manifest in the body, it seems very real, the effect on the body. So you can go and look after the body, get the test done, all the rest of stuff you need to do, take some painkillers or whatever you feel, you know, acupuncture, anything like that, to help the body deal with the effects of your imagination, you could say, as a self, until it's cleared up.
Okay.
You know, sort of holding it like that will be better than, we're not saying at all, which has been the, you know, this kind of horrible spiritual path of just ignoring the body or even just treating it badly, or
yeah
that is what I'm saying. So
yeah, that's where my it's like I need to listen to it again, because it's about the doing in the non-doing. But yeah, thank you.
Okay. Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, sure.
I can see, what about a situation? I'll just, that you're in pain, and you remind yourself that I don't need to do anything, because there's nothing really happening. Isn't that reminder a doing as well?
It's a seeing, isn't it?
Is that a seeing?
Yeah.
Right.
I can see deeply that the effect I seem to be experiencing in this moment must be as unreal as the causes, the separate being. And that is a seeing. But I'm also in that moment not fighting with what the effect seems to be appearing as. So if that's pain in the body, you know, pain in the bank account, you know, it's, you know, I will still take actions that are kinder to the body. If there's money going out of my account that isn't in there in the first place, I might still transfer some money in, try to put some money in from somewhere else. I'm not just going to, oh, well, the account is unreal and it's not really overdrawn. And
yeah.
I might do some action to sort that out. But I can see this is the effect of me, of this belief. This is a continuation of the separate sense of self. The effect and the cause are the same. Does that help?
Yeah. I felt, because having the pain this morning, I felt that the reminder could be also doing the splashing, if you know what I mean.
If it's a doing, yes. If it's a seeing.
Yes. Right.
If I come to see the effects are unreal, then it's a seeing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're not really experiencing pain and illness in the body. You're experiencing a lack of wellness,
yeah.
A disallowance of wellness and vitality and abundance of life force and joy and all of that at you.
Yeah.
So there isn't really a problem in the way that the ego thinks there is to sort out. It's how you're holding it.
Right.
Okay.
Good.
So thanks. We've got questions from Sharon, Beverly, Vidya, and Caroline, and we'll stop after those just because of time, because we've got the we'll run over, obviously. So we'll take those four questions and then we'll leave it for today. Okay, Sharon, whenever you're ready.
You know, I've been taught about purification. You know, you've heard that term, purification.
Purification, did you say?
Yeah, I said pure. What I've known other teachers talking about is purification, or, you know, you can use the Byron Katie method and turn everything around. And what you're saying basically is that we don't have to do that. That's not necessary, right?
I spent a very long time trying to purify my being, and it just made me more disturbed.
That's what happened.
I had to eventually admit I am Krishna already. I am that self he's speaking right. about.
So what you're doing is you're giving us actually a much simpler way, because what I found was, you know, the patterns come up again. And so there you are writing again, but you're not experiencing presence. And what when you said, you know, where am I? Like, I got a lift in my, like, just an opening that I've not felt before. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's too, so this is a, what I love about this is it's very experiential. This is not about just writing. So I can give all that up for now and just practice. That's because I'm already aware of the fact that that I have no idea where I am. I mean, if I am this awareness, and the other thing I want to ask you is, isn't it so that even in the illusion, okay, I know that the formlessness is noumenon, but it's still illusion, right? This is still not, or you would never use that word. You know how like different books say, well, we're an illusion or we're in a dream? How would you answer that?
The dream and the dreamer are the same one.
Right, that I knew. Okay. But when we die, then we're out of the dream.
You're out of the dream now if you're already, because so the dream still goes on, but you're watching it, right? A sense of someone.
Yeah, but why continue. I'm still here, but then there's an idea that I have fixed in my mind. When I die, though, I won't see any of this.
What's going to die?
Okay, so this is just about the fact, I have to get it. This is appearance. It's
yeah, only that which appeared is going to disappear. And that which appeared was already there but invisible and suddenly became visible. And it's visible for a while to other human bodies. Your body is visible for a while to other human bodies. And after a while, it becomes invisible again, but still equally present. You're always invisible and manifest. For a while, some visible thing seems to arise, and we call it birth. And then it goes back to being invisible again. We call it death, but it's not really. It's not
no, it's
really
just like
that.
A show. I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter because we're still in God. And I just felt like a lifting. Like, so I, yeah, because I have no idea where I am. You know, and I really was like getting to a place this week where I was watching Netflix and eating more. And, you know, and I can see it's because I was trying to get rid of the patterns. And it frustrates the hell out of me to try to get rid of these patterns because they keep coming around.
If you believe as the infinitely powerful self that you are, if you believe in imperfection, guess what you're going to keep experiencing? Okay, and even if you're trying to get rid of the effects of previous belief in imperfection, guess what you're going to keep experiencing?
Right. This is great that you're going to give this to us, because I don't know even if meditation is as important as listening to this.
This is about as succinct as I can get it, really. And this is about really, This is a school for sages, really. So.
Okay. Thanks, Helen.
Good question. Okay, Bev? Hello.
Hi. I've been having like this, this recurring thing that's been happening at work. And this made me think of it because I think my belief has been, you know, life is not fair, or just a feeling of powerlessness that you feel sometimes around the dynamics that can occur in places where you have, you know, different hierarchies or, you know, working for organization and that kind of thing. And so recently it's been really an active appearance that has been showing up. And this time I just, what came up for me was just, this is not your problem, or this is not a problem. And it's been feeling different. Not that the temptation is not there to
there'll still be an itch to scratch, won't there? We're like, I wanna, yeah.
Definitely there. But I'm just like, let's do this differently this time. Let's just, you know, kind of experiment and see what happens. So you know, the where am I is really, you know, I guess attractive to me as we're going through the three things to try. And then I wanted to share a couple of years ago, I had an issue where I had incredible back pain, and I've never had back issues before, but I mean, I could barely walk. Whatever happened, it was horrible. And I was sleeping and I couldn't sleep because it was just that bad. And I suddenly, what came to me, it was the strangest thing. And it was like, you don't have a back. And it was ridiculous to me at the time to hear it, but it was like,
you really don't. You don't have a body. This one idea, I have a body, mm-hmm. is the cause of so much pain. If I don't know where I am, how do I know what this is? What is this then? If I don't know where I'm looking from, can I even discern this is a body? Because this thought, this is a body, is a thought happening inside a body, and I don't know which body is mine. You know, so you're absolutely right. I don't have a backbone. I don't have a body. And I'm not going to say this in an open satsang, but it's not at all what we think it is. And once we think it's a body, we're condensing down. It's actually the self, isn't it? We're condensing down the self into this limited thing. You know, anyway, sorry. Yeah. I was quite passionate about that.
And so after that, I think it was a seeing, because within 1 minute, it was like gone. And, you know, my ego was like, oh, really? Well, get up and touch your toes and do this. And, you know, so.
Yeah, but you didn't do anything to be worthy of that healing, did you?
I didn't. No, I didn't.
So ego goes, well, it's not that easy. I'm sorry. Life isn't that easy, you know. But it is at this level, not that level, but this kind of simple. What we're talking about here is simplicity, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to believe in any concept at all, especially the concepts that the rest of the world take for granted, like this is a body and I have a body and I'm here. Without those three thoughts, which are happening in a head, by the way, that you're already, you know, outside of, which we've seen through lesson three. Mm-hmm. Without those three thoughts, there is no ability to suffer at mm-hmm. all. And the body will reflect that then to whatever degree it's able, to whatever degree we've seen it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a wonderful. It can be that miraculous and that quick. And miraculous is only when we're not believing any thoughts around it at all. Mm-hmm. And you saw that very literally. Maggie went through something similar. I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying, you know, she didn't think she'd be able to walk. And it cleared up. I'm not saying that we're never going to be ill again. I'm just saying we don't have to keep experiencing this belief. Mm-hmm. You know. Yep. Okay. Thanks for sharing that. Thanks. Fantastic. Okay, Vidya.
Yeah, hi. When you're talking about the Krishna and you're reading from your book, is this where there was no separation? Because as you're reading it, I was saying at the exact same time you were speaking it, I was saying it as well, and I haven't, you know, I wasn't familiar with it. So it's like I really stood in that place of I'm hearing as Krishna, but I found as you were reading it, I was saying it exactly word from word as you were saying it. So
you've been reading my book. It's a very literal manifestation of oneness, isn't it? Of being the one. When I don't know which body is mine, all kinds of wonderful things become possible. You know, I don't know where I am, I don't know which body is mine, and I identify as Krishna, which is that formless and manifest everywhereness, already so perfect, you know, perfection, nothing to fix at allness. It just all gets very simple and very quiet, and miraculous things do happen from that place, like that, you know.
Yeah, that's what I wondered, whether there was, you know, it's just that one self, because when you read from yours, it was exactly the same. It's just, this is all the one self, and not that I understand it.
It can't be understood, something like that, can it really? It can't be figured out. And would you want to? It's kind of cheapen it a little bit.
Yeah. And another thing I found really helpful is that anything that arises is really to give it less and less credence, you know. It's just really it's getting stronger to just stay in this one place.
Just a mirage, isn't it? It's another mirage arising right now, even though it's a three-dimensional sensory mirage, it's still a mirage.
Even anything that appears to be moving in life is to really, it's almost like, no, I don't trust it. It's not saying that it's not real, but anything thought that I could give to it, I don't want to give anything to it. It's just I just feel that there's such a importance to be unmovable, you know, like that old sage tree, you know, just really unmovable,
being resolute in your knowingness and a real deep conviction.
Good. Thank you.
Lovely, thank you. Caroline, last but not least.
I just want to say, I think you, I feel very, very touched. I think the teaching today has been brilliant. I didn't know it was going to be like this. I don't really know where I am either. I think you're brilliant, Helen. It's just such a fantastic teaching. I can't begin. I mean, I don't have any questions or anything. I'm a bit dazed. And it just all makes sense. And I just.
Nicely vacant.
Yeah, it's just been so. Just thank you.
I'm very, very grateful to be able to help. I was given, you know, in a dualistic sense, I was given these ideas for these four lessons, and these four lessons give the key to life. And then I was kind of somewhat frustrated by doing the course, in that the lack of time, you know, to really go into them deeper. And this is why I'm just so enjoying doing this. This graduate program for those that really just want nirvana or whatever we're going to call it, you know. So it's
I'm just very grateful.
I'm really grateful for all of you on here for trusting yourselves to believe in yourselves that you can also be Krishna, already are Krishna, you know, which seems to be the word we're using today, but you know, the self.
It's been an hour in time, and it's just been so important. I just feel so grateful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's lovely to hear. Lots of love. Yeah, okay.
Love you.
Okay. So just very quickly before we finish. So as I've said, if you want to use the contact form on the graduate program page to feedback to me your progress and that all of that, I'll read those out anonymously and sort of guide the ongoing seeing that you're having and the understandings or any challenges with what we said today. And if you want the fast track, study all those three things we've been today, and you can study each one of these lessons per month, and it'd be a road to complete freedom. But we're going to do similar every month. But if you want to feedback, that's great. Can I just ask that you try to do it just once a week, maybe, you know, sort of journal throughout the week, and then send me some feedback on a Thursday or Friday, and I'll see if I can get you recording something on a Saturday, just going through what everyone sent, because it'll help everyone else. Please, please, please get together in groups, make friends with everyone that's in this program. There's a Facebook group, as I've said, and you can help each other so much easier. And make it so much faster to just really come out of suffering. And hopefully you're sensing that there's some really powerful stuff here to just kind of lift you out of it once and for all, let's just say. And it can be just like that. It can be like that. simplicity is what's the key at this stage. So just focusing on that. And you absolutely are already that sage. You're just allowing it to come forth. And I'm really excited to see where this is going to go. So, okay, I'll stop this recording.